We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money. The skies are sunny. Old man depression, you are through. You done us wrong.
Isaac Newton may have said, "What goes up must come down." The concept still serves as a stepping stone for understanding gravity. Ironically, Newton disproved the very quote that many attribute to him. Gravity weakens with increasing distance and may not bring an object down if that object possesses enough upward velocity. Like our moon traveling around the Earth, a body may go into orbit. So which versions of gravity applies to U.S. stocks? After the Dow picked up 26.5% and the S&P 500 packed on 29% in 2013, will U.S. stocks stay out there in outer space? Or will apples drop from the stock tree and slam investors on the head? Now, I presented that possibility in terms of an either-or, but truthfully, the answer might be neither. That's because there are no ironclad guarantees in the investing universe. U.S. stocks may climb dramatically higher from current levels, or they might move slightly ahead, or they might dip gently from where they are today, or they could plunge into an abyss. Anything can and anything does happen. Presently, there is a general sense of well-being and relative calm in the investing world again. It should not be too difficult to remember, however, that there was similar optimism about the future during the new economy of the 1990s. Then the NASDAQ crashed 79% between 2000 and 2002, and it still hasn't recovered 14 years later. In the same way, few recognized the exceptionally adverse impact that plummeting real estate values would have on global credit and the worldwide financial system. In a period of 17 months between October of 2007 and March of 2009, the S&P 500 tumbled a horrifying 57%. Keep in mind, the previous crises did not seem obvious until after the fact. Most folks had been hopeful about their retirement accounts at the start of 2000. Most people were quite satisfied with their property values and their investment accounts in 2007. It follows that you have to know how to act to insure against a disaster, even if there are few signs that any such disaster is imminent. What do I see in my crystal ball for 2014? I think stocks are likely to accumulate modest gains, though foreign stocks may reclaim the performance torch from the U.S. The reason that stocks are likely to perform admirably is twofold. A, central banks like the Federal Reserve are inclined to continue emergency-level stimulus throughout the year, keeping interest rates relatively contained. And B, average retail investors are just now warming up to the idea that they should become more aggressive. And on that latter point, when everyone jumps in the pool, that'll be the time when the plug gets pulled. Greater stability in interest rates would also have a positive impact on fixed income holdings. That's a significant change from 2013, when the bond market had its worst year since 1994. Properly diversified portfolios in 2013 experienced the drag of small losses from rate-sensitive assets like bonds, preferred shares, real estate investment trusts, or REITs, and emerging market stocks. In 2014, interest rates are likely to be more stable, offering upside opportunities in some of these areas. In truth, the crystal ball inquiry is irrelevant to the management of downside risk. This is because weakness can arise in any given month of a year with or without provocation. I would reduce portfolio risk if assets hit stop limit loss orders or if they drop below established technical trend lines. While diversification limited gains in 2013, I anticipate greater benefits from diversifying across asset classes in 2014. Muni bonds could offer a combination of tax-free cash flow and capital appreciation in taxable accounts. Last year, they did not. Emerging markets like China could provide surprising upside due to their remarkable discounts when compared to the developed world. Last year, emerging markets collectively lost money. Going into 2014, the vast majority of my clients have no direct exposure to REITs, precious metals, long-term bonds, or the bulk of emerging market ETF possibilities. If that makes me bearish on the asset classes, so be it. However, I recognize that with modest provocation, rates could turn dramatically lower, potentially benefiting the very same asset classes that higher rates have hindered. If circumstances change, moving averages, and ETF fund flow will provide the info needed to make any allocation changes. Similarly, based on articles that I've written as far back as October of 2012 and as recently as December of 2013, one may deem me bullish on dollar-hedged foreign equities in Europe and Asia for 2014. For example, WisdomTree hedged European equity, ticker symbol HEDJ, is above its 200-day moving average. Mario Draghi and the ECB's ongoing need to battle deflation with more central bank intervention will mean more economic stimulus and probably more upside for investors. What's more, European stocks trade at a 20% discount to their U.S. counterparts, while European major indexes are roughly 35% below all-time peaks. I'm overweighting stocks that may benefit from the battle against global deflation and underweighting the ones that would not. In the income-producing arena, I'm overweighting shorter-term high-yield corporate and shorter-term investment-grade assets. I particularly like the laddered, held-to-maturity Guggenheim Bullet Share series, funds like Guggenheim Bullet Shares High Yield Corporate 2016, BSJG, and 2017 BSJH. Short-term and intermediate-term munis may be appropriate for taxable accounts. So what investments should perform well in the ongoing battle against global deflation? WisdomTree hedged Japan equity, ticker symbol DXJ, and WisdomTree hedged Europe equity, HEDJ, should both benefit from a probable weakening of the euro and yen versus the dollar. Stateside, I'm sticking with U.S. stock ETFs that are most capable of handling any deflationary scares. Whereas 2013 may have had a slightly negative impact on dividend growers and dividend yielders due to the rapid spike in interest rates, a more stable rate environment in 2014 will be kinder to companies that do not necessarily wither in the face of deflation. Most companies view dividend cuts as a last resort, and it follows that I like both Vanguard Dividend Appreciation, ticker symbol VIG, and Vanguard High Dividend Yield, ticker symbol VYM. I also overweight tech, as falling prices tend to be part of the sector's regular cycle. Now, you heard me mention global deflation quite a bit here, and yes, deflation is the global issue most likely to affect U.S. markets in 2014. U.S. inflation is only 1% year over year and has been declining. Meanwhile, Europe's latest consumer price reading logged an appalling four-year low of 0.7%, with Spain at 0.1% and Germany at a modest 1.2%. And Japanese authorities have actually been celebrating the fact that the country managed to get prices to rise at 1%. Deflation will not necessarily impact markets adversely as long as the European Central Bank continues to cut rates and as long as the Federal Reserve does not remove stimulus too quickly. What's more, the Bank of Japan will have to keep being aggressive. If, however, the world's central banks declare that deflation battle is over too soon, and if central banks appear to be tightening the reins, U.S. stocks would suffer. In other words, it's all about the central banks, it's all about electronic money creation, and it's all about the manipulation of interest rates. I am by no means saying that what the central banks have been doing for 5+ years is the right thing for longer-term well-being of the economies. That's a different discussion entirely. Yet the global issue that could knock the bull market in stocks for a loop in 2014 is the possibility that central banks like the ECB fail to move, like they were slow to move in 2011, and/or the U.S. Fed moves too quickly towards ending its high-powered QE and zero interest rate policy. Now, there are some bears out there who still believe that quantitative easing is going to hurt the markets in the short term. Peter Buchvar, Managing Director and Chief Market Analyst at Lindsay Group, estimates that the S&P 500 could drop as much as 20% this year based on the assumption that the Federal Reserve will terminate its third iteration of quantitative easing, or QE3. He explains that whenever previous versions of quantitative easing came closer to the end, the Fed-fueled bubble, he calls it, faltered, and that this time will not be any different. While Mr. Buchvar feels that the Fed will actually get across the goal line by December, I believe the committee members at the Fed do not yet know what they will do. That is, they're going to make decisions that are entirely dependent on incoming data. And since most data tend to be uneven, and since Chairwoman Yellen is likely to err on the side of caution, I expect the Fed to skip a tapering increment or two at the least. At most, they may ratchet up the creation of electronic money printing to buy $100 million in U.S. debt each month. Indeed, we may see the central bank offering up even more stimulus than when Ben Bernanke ran the show. Sound crazy? Picture the acceleration of the decline in refinancing and mortgage applications if the 10-year Treasury yields drifted beyond 3.25. Envision the hoarding of cash and the trepidation to hire full-time employees as the combination of the employer mandate for small companies to provide health care collides with increased borrowing costs. And imagine Chairwoman Yellen receiving conflicting data, from an ongoing decline in labor force participation to additional deflationary trends, the result of which would certainly threaten the Fed's mandate of price stability. Those who believe that the economy is increasingly self-sustaining argue that the rising rates will not choke off the recovery nor adversely impact stock assets. Others like myself and Mr. Buchvar see the U.S. economy as exceptionally dependent on easy-to-get, unusually cheap money. The difference in my outlook from Mr. Buchvar's is that I believe the Fed will act to contain rates using any combination of excuses that it sees fit. Yellen will be particularly motivated to avoid any perception that the committee has lost the confidence of the markets. Keep in mind, of course, that rates do not even need to rise for the Fed to decide upon more stimulus. A prolonged economic soft patch might create enough uncertainty for stocks to decline quickly, and a risk-off trade witnesses a flight to quality back into bonds. In other words, even if yields are falling, Yellen's Fed may feel the pressure to do something if economic signs indicate structural weakness. Since the economy is likely to demonstrate uneven and sometimes troubling data in 2014, expect the Fed to emphasize its data dependency. And if that emphasis does not bolster risk on dip buying in a pinch, don't be shocked if the committee votes to offer up additional stimulus measures. One way or another, then, ETF enthusiasts should set aside a modest amount of cash for a highly probable corrective period. The cash should be used for exchange-traded vehicles on your wish list. For example, I've been a longtime advocate of First Trust NASDAQ Dividend, ticker symbol TDIV. It does not have the flair of social media, per se, though its concentration on cash flow producing giants like Apple and Microsoft provides a basic level of protection. Investors tend to hold on to large company dividend yielders like Apple and Microsoft. Moreover, many of the holdings in TDIV trade at price to earnings ratios below respective historical PEs. In other words, TDIV may be the closest thing to cheap in U.S. stocks right now. Nevertheless, one does not necessarily need to buy at first blush. TDIV regularly pulls back to its intermediate-term 100-day trend line. Interested investors could pick some shares up at the 100-day, or you might elect to wait for a more substantial sell-off based on one of the scenarios described earlier. Should a correction take place, you might add TDIV when it reaches its longer-term 200-day moving average. Another ETF that I talked about back in November is Market Vector's agribusiness, ticker symbol MOO. Unlike the bulk of broad market benchmarks that have been regularly eclipsing record highs, fertilizer producers and equipment makers are still in recovery mode. MOO has notched higher lows in every month since bottoming out in September. It follows that believers in agricultural-related businesses might find MOO attractive near where the fund's 100-day meets its 200-day. Right now, MOO is closing in on a golden cross, where the intermediate-term trend line rises above its long-term trend line, and a price pullback to that level would be, could be, should be rewarding.
Are you terrified that an economic disaster is near? Are you scared to death that you won't be able to protect your investments? And what about when investments inevitably go back up? Will you know what to do? You've been following me since the 90s. Let me show you how I have protected my clients' assets in the bad times and how I can help you grow your investments in the better times. I will manage your investments the way that I manage my own investments, with my time-tested, smart, and balanced approach. Give me a call at 888-500-GARY. That's 888-500-4279. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at ETFExpert or read my daily commentary at www.etfexpert.com.